Les colloques du Collège de France.
Okay, so thanks very much. Let's begin. I want to cast your mind back to the year 1997. What was happening in 1997? Well, let's see it. It'll emerge. Ah, yes, Titanic was topping the Billboard, the movie charts, and also Tamagotchi, the digital pets, were very popular with the young kids. And I started grad school in 1997, but one noise rose above the din, and that was the publication of The Number Sense by Stanislaus Dehaene. And when I entered graduate school, I had no idea the importance that this book would play in my own career and directing my own interests, research interests. Stan started the book. This is the first line of the preface. He said, "We are surrounded by numbers." And then he continued, "Might numbers then be almost as old as life itself? Might they be engraved in the very architecture of our brains?" And so I'm going to explore those issues today, as I've been doing for the last couple decades. So this is the outline. Doesn't it look great? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take us on a journey in three parts from the retina. We're going to start with the retina. We're going to go up through perception and conception, through the approximate number system, up to higher level symbolic mathematics, to lexical meanings, and then back down again. Okay? In 15 minutes. So here I put something on your retina. You're supposed to stare at the red dot. So stare at the red dot, please, while I'm talking. Don't move your eyes away from the red dot. And when I change the scene, I want everyone to shout out, which side has more dots, the left side or the right side? Shout out your answer. Here we go. Okay, now move your eyes back and forth, and you'll see they're identical. They're identical images, right? So when Burr and Ross came up with this demonstration in 2008, they were very excited, and rightfully so. It's a very cool demo. But they argued that number here functions as an early visual feature, which means that it's retinotopically organized. So as you saw, when you move your eyes, the illusion disappears, right? It's very brittle in a way. But we were reasoning from some work that we had been doing over the years about how representing number involves binding to a set. And we wondered if, because the IPS is involved in two different functions, one is estimating the number, and the other one is in tracking objects, might it be that approximate number would survive retinotopy if we bound it to an object? So how do we do that? We do something like this. So I might say to you, count the number of dots on the left red circle, or count the number of dots on the right red circle, or count the number of dots on the screen. Notice that in every case, I have to specify a grounding object, like on the screen or on the right red circle, right? So this is the role of set binding to specifying the numerosity to count. In fact, in an abstract, one can't count unless you specify the set. So I can't say, everybody, please tell me how many. How many what? How many people in the room? How many eyeballs in the room? How many, right? I have to specify the set. Okay, so we thought this might, putting this together, it might survive retinotopy and actually be more of an object-centric representation. The way we test that is we do what you did when you started moving your eyes, but we do it on the screen. We move it on the screen. So according to Burr and Ross, this would destroy the number adaptation result. So, and I should have mentioned, this is the newest work in my lab. It was just accepted yesterday. and Caroline Myers is the graduate student who led this effort. Okay, so what does this look like? Here's one demo. They start moving around. Dots fade in and fade out. Each time they fade in and fade out, they're in new spatial positions. And the movement of the dots ensures that at test, they're never at the same position, right? So this was the first attempt, but now I want to show you where we got to. We eventually got rid of the dots, got rid of the stable positions, and the screen looks like this. So when you hear a beep, you're supposed to decide which side has more dots, which cloud has more dots. So if you experienced any difference in number in that case, or in this case, that was adaptation, because in fact they're identical when the beep sounds. Okay, so it might be a subtle effect for you in this viewing situation, but for our subjects, over the course of the studies, we ran 120 subjects, and 102 show the effect. 102 show number adaptation. So this means that number survives spatial displacement because number is bound to an object. And in this last case that we just showed, the object was the clouds of dots. I mean, you could still see there was a cloud on the left and a cloud on the right, and that spatial envelope is enough to be a basis for binding the objects into a set. So what we've just seen is, and then there's some more papers on this stuff, what we've just seen is that enumerating and even the simple act of adapting to a collection requires a set binding operation. And in this simple case, conception, not perception, is the ultimate determiner of our conscious experience. What do I mean by that? I mean, early cognition is acting as a filter on what you're allowed to experience, what you're allowed to see, right? If you do the retinotopic version that Byrne Ross did, and you move your eyes or they move the screen, you're not allowed to see that. Consciousness won't let you see it. If you do what we're doing, where you bind it to a moving object, all of a sudden now consciousness says, all right, I'll allow you to see that. And this involves a interplay between perception, conception, and the ANS. So we think the IPS is central to this effect. Okay, so the second part, I'm going to move up into the mid-level representations and say that because of an interface between the ANS, that's the approximate number system, and math cognition, we can see that the ANS representations are truly numerical. And I'm going to show that by asking you to do something that we think of as bona fide numerical, and that's solve for X. So everyone now think about solving for X, please. I'll give you a second. So you don't have to actually solve this, but probably you attacked the problem. You first did a parse of the problem. You said, oh, I guess I'm going to add 6 and 3 to get 9. That's an operation that might involve the approximate number system. I'm going to subtract 9 over here. That's another, you know, a subtraction might involve the approximate number system. So you, this kind of problem, you're doing many things. It involves executive functions. It involves working memory. But a part of it might involve approximate number representation. And so what we did is we asked, does how good you are, individual differences, how good you are at doing these kind of math problems, does that correlate with how well you do on a dots task? And this is the first result that we had on this. The task is there, the dots task. So on each trial, you have to decide, are there more blue or more yellow? So we can play some. That was hard, but I think it was blue. That's easy, and it's blue. So some trials are easy, some trials are hard. And by manipulating that, we do some psychophysics using some math that thankfully Stan laid out. I just cribbed Stan's math and fit my psychophysics that way. And we see this relationship where, so being a big number here means having a more variable approximate number sense. And so more variable number sense is consistent with having worse scores in school mathematics. More precise number sense is consistent with having better performance in school mathematics. We've had many papers on this. I'll just share one other, more recent one. This is a project that I did with Ale, who's here, and Juan also is part of this. And we found this is socioeconomic status, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 being high and 1 being low. And we find two relationships in the data. This is data from Uruguay. Both a relationship between school math and approximate number. Here it's positive because we're not doing Weber fraction, we're just doing percent correct on a task. And also a relationship with socioeconomic status. Poorer children are doing more poorly at the approximate number system, and they also do more poorly at school mathematics. Okay, so that was, and we have many papers on that one. I felt weird about showing all these papers, but I guess it's important to say it's not a one-off. This is a thing. This is a little tiny industry, a cottage industry. So these were done around the world thanks to many collaborators. I've been very happy with doing these collaborations. One that I'm excited about that we just started our second paper is this one from Tibet. So this is Tibetan children, and it's exciting. Okay, so we covered that. Now I'm gonna go higher. What's higher than symbolic mathematics? I don't know, maybe lexical meanings, maybe they're on par, maybe they're at the same level. The connections are complex. And maybe there's something even more complicated than lexical meanings, though I can't really think about it right now. What are lexical meanings like? Well, if you go down to your philosophy department and you ask your semanticist friends, as I have done, they'll tell you, well, things like this. The sentence, most of the dots are blue, is true if and only if the intersection of dot and blue, the cardinality of the intersection of dot and blue, is greater than the cardinality of the subtraction, set subtraction of dot and blue. That's what they'll tell you. And you'll say, thank you so much. Now I really understand. And it's complicated because then they follow up and they say, but that's not the only one you could write. You could write countably many formula that would capture the meaning of most. So here's three different formula. A says the number of blue dots is greater than the number of not blue dots. B says the number of blue dots is greater than the number of yellow dots plus the number of green dots plus the number of red dots plus the number of magenta dots. Truth functionally, totally equivalent, right? Or here's one that might strike you as strange. C, the blue dots are greater than all of the dots minus the blue dots. And with many experiments run, I can tell you that the actual meaning of most that you have in your head, if you have a meaning for most, many, it's only the quantificational use of most, determiner use of most that we have in English, only appears in about 25% of languages on Earth. So, but you could change it to a phrase and say le plupart, the majority, or right. Sorry, the right algorithm, the winning algorithm, C. C is your meaning of most. And now let's explore that. How do we find that out? Here, let's do one demo. So now what I'm gonna do, let me grab this mic. Okay, I'm gonna split the room in half right here, okay? So if you're, yes, yep. And white sweatshirt, yes. And red, yes, good. Okay, now I'm gonna ask everyone to close their eyes in a second, and then I'm gonna give two trials. One trial to this side, one trial to that side, okay? So we'll call this the left side as you're facing the stage, the left side people. That has nothing to do with this. Don't worry, I'll explain. And the right side people, okay? So everyone close your eyes. Now, I'm gonna set up the trial. Left side people will do you first. Keep your eyes closed. When you open your eyes, you'll see two images on the screen, one on the left side of the screen, one on the right side of the screen. And I want you, when you open your eyes, to decide which side is the better example. They're both fine examples. There's no reason to count. There's no trick. Which side feels like the better example of the English sentence, most of the dots are blue. Most of the dots are blue. Okay, you can open your eyes. Most of the dots are blue. Most of the dots are blue. Which side feels like the better example? Okay, good. Everyone have a choice. Close your eyes again. Now to the right side people. Similar direction. You'll see two images, left side and right side. I want you to decide which side feels like the better example of the English sentence, there are more blue dots than yellow dots. You can open your eyes. There are more blue dots than yellow dots. There are more blue dots than yellow dots. Do you have your answer? Okay, everyone open your eyes. People on the left side who heard most of the dots are blue, please raise your hand high and hold it up high if you chose this side. Raise your hand, keep it up, keep it up. People on this side, if you chose this side for more blue dots than yellow dots, raise your hand. Oh, keep up your arms. We have to see everyone's arms. Okay, so you see the proportional difference?
We got more than half of the arms up on this side and less than a quarter on that side. That's the result. Notice that, if you haven't counted yet, there's identical number of blue dots, identical number of yellow dots. These are both perfectly good examples of the sentence, most of the dots are blue. They're both perfectly good examples of the sentence, more blue dots than yellow dots. And even when I remove the syntax that I gave you, undergrads still pick this side for most, right? So where does that come from?
I think it comes from these underlying algorithms that support our word meanings, and an interaction from word meanings all the way down to selection, attentional selection in perception and conception. So here, this is our return back down. So in the case of more, now it says more yellow than blue. It's okay, it doesn't matter. The meaning of more is, more yellow is, the cardinality of yellow is greater than the cardinality of blue. That's two subset selections. You're making two subsets. And if those subsets are removed in space, even better. I want two subsets. I want the blues and I want the yellows. Give me that, right? That's what you responded to. What about when I said most? Most, the meaning that I said to you was the right meaning, is the yellow dots are greater than all of the dots minus the yellow dots. Well, all of the dots is a superset selection. You want all of the items together. It's easier to enumerate all the items when they're all there spatially together intermixed. So this side preferred the side that had intermixed items. So these are two, now again, I'll just say for all those who don't work on language, the vast majority of semanticists would say, no, Justin, you're silly. All those algorithms are fine because they're truth conditionally equivalent. There's no reason to prefer one to the other. And what we've been working on for a while now is showing that that's a false belief, that actually semantics is psychology, and psychology has to be cashed out in a specific algorithm for each meaning. So that's our connection from lexical meanings down to conception and perception. So here's what I've told you about today. I want to give a very big thank you to Stan. Here he emerges gradually. He's the man in the cool jacket with the colorful brain, looking smart there. Thank you so much, Stan, for inspiring me and inspiring all of your students and colleagues outside of your lab. It's been wonderful, so thank you. And thanks to everyone for your attention. And these are the collaborators.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.